Welcome to the Cannabis Equipment News Podcast.
Hi, I'm David Manti, and welcome to a new episode of the Cannabis Equipment News Podcast. With me today is David Kessler, Chief Science Officer at Agrify. Thank you very much for joining me today, David.
It's my pleasure, David. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right, before we get started, please make sure to like, share, and subscribe to the podcast. You could also help us out a lot by leaving the podcast a positive review on whatever platform you use. Finally, if you want to email the podcast, you can reach me at david@cannabisequipmentnews.com. All right, David, I'd like to start with an easy one. How did you get involved in the cannabis industry?
Oh, well, that's an easy one. Cannabis. Early on, before I even consumed any cannabis, my friends were very interested in cannabis. And I didn't understand why we spent so much time looking for cannabis, trying to find a place to use cannabis. And then they went and looked for more cannabis right away. And it came with the seeds in every pack. I mean, they weren't getting the highest quality cannabis. So I started cultivating it, having been free farm labor for my parents since birth, and very quickly realized that the diversity in the genetics, the differences in the flower aroma, the effect really caught me and got me very interested. And so a bit of a collector, started trying to grow and collect as many strains as I could. And that really started me down a road of not just loving cannabis, but loving plants and the vast genetic diversity that this particular plant can offer.
So your interest in horticulture started with cannabis?
It actually did. Now, my mother did ornamentals around the house, and she did an edible landscape, and my father was very interested in prize-winning roses. So I was around horticulture from the beginning, but my natural interests lead towards math and science. And once I found cannabis, it started an exploration of genetic diversity, understanding the plant, both from an evolutionary standpoint, as well as from a biological one. And it hit with me in terms of my interests. And to this day, it's still just one of the things I love in the plant world, while I do now love other plants as well.
Well, and you grew up on a farm, so I really don't have to ask you about your work ethic at all. I know that you were born with that.
More or less. But in my household, it's only worth doing if it's done right, and it will be done right. So there was no other option. But when it comes to agriculture, you know, what people should appreciate about cannabis is it's such a complex plant. And just like other plants, it doesn't wait. So when a task needs to be performed, whether it's at a hobbyist level or a commercial level, plants are not very good at being patient. And so you need to find a way to address the plant's needs, to provide for those needs. And the better you do that, I think the better the plant outcomes are.
Do you think sometimes that's a misconception from people that jump into cannabis, is they don't realize how labor intensive and attentive they're going to need to be with the plant?
You know, I think that different people are going to jump into cannabis with different ideas and notions about what kind of labor is involved. One of the most interesting notions that I typically dispel is that the goal is to create this utopian environment for a plant, right? A utopia, an imaginary state of perfection, of stressless life. The fact of what we do as cultivators is we want to grow the healthiest plants possible. But it's not just about growing a healthy plant. In fact, what cultivators want, if you dig in, is to elicit a particular outcome from that plant. Now, they want that plant to reach its genetic potential, but maybe they're growing it for oil extraction instead of for cut flower. Or maybe they're growing it and they want it to have more bag appeal, aesthetic appeal. So they want to bring out the vibrant purple colors. Well, in order to do that, you don't provide the plants with a utopian environment. You provide a utopia, they'll grow well, they'll be healthy. But in fact, cannabis, as a diverse manufacturing chemical plant as it is, it produces upwards of 550 different chemical metabolites. It's actually a response to stress that can help us elicit higher amounts of cannabinoids or terpenes. And so while the goal of cultivation is to grow a healthy plant, it's also to be able to apply a very controlled stressor and then withdraw that stress so you can allow the plant to recover. But these particular stress events are really helpful in eliciting the best performance from our plants. And, you know, to the point of how much labor is involved as the original question, I don't think people are contemplating the labor as much as they're trying to grow a good plant. And a lot of people focus on creating this optimized environment. And you need both the optimized environment, but the ability to then adjust that environment intentionally. And so I think that we're moving to an era of intentional cannabis cultivation, where we use new science, new data, and the granular control over the cultivation environment to elicit the best response from our plants.
So is that where Agrify fits in the industry? Are you guys just really good at stressing the plant out in the right ways?
Well, I think where Agrify fits is that it really is a different approach to cultivation. A lot of people have gotten into this industry and they provide the best LED light in the industry, or one of the industry leading efficient HVAC packages. What Agrify did is that we really looked at the industry as a whole, and we tried to understand what the needs of the industry were, what's missing. And what we realized is one of the biggest challenges in the cannabis industry right now is producers trying to produce a consistent product. You know, it's very common for a grower to put out a phenomenal batch of flower, followed up by a middling one, where you might see a 5 or 6 percentage point change in the cannabinoids. This level of reproducibility of consistency wouldn't be acceptable in pharmaceuticals. It wouldn't be acceptable in nutraceuticals, and it certainly wouldn't be accepted in the FDA world. So what Agrify did is we looked at, where does that variance come from? Why can one genetic, a clone, an exact copy of the same plant perform in the same room so much better one time than another? And as it turns out, I think I mentioned cannabis produces about 550 different metabolites, but while the DNA dictates what is possibly produced, it's completely the environment that is dictating what is produced. So this is really nature and nurture. So what Agrify realized is that if we are able to kind of take a ecosystem approach, like Apple, develop software, hardware, infrastructure, process, consumables that all support a cohesive end goal, a process, then we can help the industry achieve this level of consistency. And so what we've done is we've taken cultivation, we've miniaturized it down into a basically a 300 cubic foot growth chamber. We call this a VFU, a vertical farm unit. Inside of every 300 cubic foot chamber, there's two layers of canopy, granular control over your light intensity, your light quality, your photo period, your CO2, relative humidity, vapor pressure, temperatures, and different nutritional mixes, and down to the milliliter and second, very granular and precise control. And so what this does is this system is embedded with an enormous amount of data collection. And so each chamber records about 1.5 million data points a year. And in doing so, it's able to then recreate that internal environment very precisely. So what we're doing is effectively minimizing the environmental variation from crop cycle to crop cycle. We're eliminating a lot of the variation from the environment itself. For example, hot spots between lights, where in traditional HPS grows, you have really bright lights hung about 3 foot, 4 foot over the plant. So our whole goal is around uniformity, about homogenization, keeping that environment exactly uniform. And it's incredible how much you can then minimize the variation on chemical profiles. So for example, there's a competition that goes around the country. I love these guys because it's an unbiased competition, the Grow-Off. They give cultivators the same clone. They send that clone product to an independent laboratory, and the results pick the winners. No pay to play, no popularity contest. How is your growing versus mine? And when they give a cultivator the same clone, they actually saw almost 100% variation in cannabinoids, from under 15% to 29%. And on the terpene side, under 1% to over 5%. That's a 500% level of variation. So when you look at that level of variability and you think, how am I, as a cultivator, someone that's trying to earn the trust of a consumer or a patient, going to be able to do that if my profiles vary that much from crop cycle to crop cycle. And so when you look at Agrify's methodology, the results that our client operators are getting, for example, across a dozen batches of lemon haze across 3 months, less than 0.9% variation in the cannabinoids and less than 0.1% variation in the terpene fractions. And this is repeated strain after strain, harvest after harvest. So really what Agrify does, if I'm summing this up, is it's a different method for cultivation, really focused on granular control over the environment, reproducible process that eliminates things like geographic and environmental differences and allows operators to produce a consistent product and to do it regardless of geography, regardless of climate, of time of year. And this is, I think, where the industry is going. It's going towards intentional production.
Are these vertical farming units, are they essentially a structure in a structure?
I think that would be an accurate way to think of them. So they need to go inside a climate-controlled envelope, right? So you can't just put it in a metal warehouse with no HVAC, and it's 110 degrees in the North Desert, and they're going to grow. Essentially, each growth chamber is an independent climate-controlled environment, but it needs to go into a climate-controlled envelope, right? If it's comfortable for an employee to be in, then our units are going to provide the full range of environmental opportunity for the growers and for the plants. In terms of the structure themselves, each unit is rigid and self-supporting and can actually support more than just its own unit, but two or three units on top. So because each VFU has two layers of canopy, if I stack three of these, which looks a lot like Lego bricks, where I put two bricks down and I integrate a middle platform, which is a easy access, you're never having to reach or stretch into our VFU, so cultivators have comfortable access to inspect and work on the plants. But it also, it builds the second and the third floor up with our units as you're putting them in place. And so it's a very efficient way to utilize that vertical space. It does not require infrastructure in terms of the verticality. So you're not dealing with trying to anchor things from the ceiling and actually put in structural posts. The units themselves are the structure. Think of the skeletal scaffolding that you might put around a building that's being painted. The units themselves, the VFUs, actually are the scaffolding that provide the second and third floor.
So what does installation look like? And do you have customers that are they all brand new grows, or do you have people that are retrofitting their grows in bringing your system in house?
So I would say it's probably 60-40, more new grows than old. When it comes to the new grows or the old, the infrastructure requirements are still the same because the equipment is the same. So we tend not to concern ourselves with the method of the envelope HVAC as long as it is conditioned. And typically what we tell clients is that it needs to be conditioned for human comfort. There's an ASHRAE standard that provides what human comfort is. But I think that if you just walk around a building and you're comfortable, you'll know. Beyond that, we use a chilled water system and a boiler system to control the cooling. That allows us a more efficient removal of the heat from the lights, as well as a little bit more independence when we're removing heat or humidity from the inside of the cultivation environment. In addition to that, there's two-stage dehumidification from an electric source to allow further removal of moisture. We're injecting CO2 as needed and within accuracy of about 25 to 50 parts per million of the target at all times. And so when we look to the infrastructure, it's an electrical drop to support all the lighting and the computer automation. It is a chilled water line and a boiler line, as well as a Cat5 data cable, because we are going to need to record all of these data points. And each VFU is recording 1.5 million data points at minimum. So when you start getting into 100 or 200 or some of our larger facilities up in the 1,000 to 1,500 VFU range, then the amount of data starts to become quite large. And it starts to provide you a really interesting resource to better your own operations.
What are some of the things that, you know, an operator that has 1,500 of these VFUs in-house, what are they learning from all that information?
Well, I think that with more of our VFUs, because they're independent, what a lot of our client operators are realizing is that it actually can reduce the learning curve when you bring in a new genetic. So typically, if I'm going to run a new genetic, let's say compounds new pave cut, well, I'm going to have to grow it in my room. And let's say my room is a pretty big room. You know, I'll put 100 plants of pave in there, maybe 200. And then that's going to take 8 to 10 weeks to mature. And then I'll harvest it and I'll kind of evaluate the flower. I'll see if it was good. Well, in a VFU system, instead of doing a single cycle of cultivation with a large number of plants, each VFU is loaded as a monocrop, which means a single strain per, so that you can really elicit a dedicated response from that genetic and not say, oh, well, it's doing good for the pave, but the lava lemon cake, not so much, right? You want to be able to be patient specific, or in this case, plant specific. So what the cultivators are really learning is that they can take a new genetic. They can set up essentially a research program. And my team is more than happy to help our customers, because there is an ongoing relationship, to help them optimize. So that means running it at different temperature offsets, different light qualities, different CO2 levels, and really starting to understand how small environmental differences can elicit very significant changes in the outcome of the plant. You know, going back to that stressor example that I was talking about earlier in Utopia, you know, think about a bodybuilder, right? We think of bodybuilders as athletes. We think of them as in peak health and condition. You know, when I think about what an average man, 6 foot tall, takes in 2000 calories a day, gets their 10,000 steps, that's going to produce a healthy human being. But if we're trying to grow the biggest human being, if we're trying to make the most strong individual possible, then we use stress, and it's natural, right? Lifting weights is actually damaging your muscles, but over time, your muscle fiber builds and you get stronger. Eating higher amounts of protein and changing your diet and actually taking in more food is a stressor. And so when we start thinking about how stress is used to shape the human body, it's not such a great leap that we're using stress to shape the outcome of our plants. I think it's just so few cultivators have the ability to both elicit a stressor and then remove that in a controlled fashion, that it hasn't really just been popularized yet. The fact of the matter is, though, there's phenomenal research that absolutely supports, both in cannabis and other plant families, that are typically, routinely even, using stress events to elicit a response, right? A lot of the herbs we grow, the summer savory, the thyme, there are coordinated droughts during the cultivation period that are known to bring out higher quantities of these essential oils, the things that give these herbs their flavor and aroma. And the same has actually been documented for both the cannabinoids and the terpenes in cannabis in some of the modern research coming out of Canada as a method of controlling drought stress to elicit a response. So we're just at the beginning of this road, but it's an exciting road to go down.
How big is a VFU? What's the footprint?
Really good question. So it's a little under 4 feet wide, because there's a compliance issue in fire code. So we want to be under 4 feet. It's 8 feet in length, and it's about 9.5 feet tall. And when you think of it, there's two layers of canopy inside each of those chambers. So you have about 4 feet of grow space for each level of plant. And then there's a foot of environmental control area on the top that's for robotics, computers, environmental control systems. And that allows the unit to operate autonomously and independently from the others.
And it has to be completely opaque, right? To make sure that no outside light gets in.
Correct. So on both of the 8 foot sides, there's an antimicrobial lightproof curtain that rolls up and down through either mechanical speech functions or from your computer or tablet. And this allows you to essentially compartmentalize the growth chambers, reducing the risks from pathogens and pests spreading. But also, as you're pointing out, David, it prevents the what we call light pollution, which is where photoperiosity is sacrificed because infiltration of light from another source.
So what are some of these, when I think of some of these grow operations that you're in that have 1500 of these units, I'm just picturing like the warehouse from Indiana Jones.
You're not wrong. There's life safety code and certain design elements that we want to make sure that essentially the footpath from one VFU to the working areas and the prep spaces are convenient. We do a lot of time and motion studies looking at the efficiency of both the plant touching tasks and the way the facilities are laid out. And what we want to do is prevent unnecessary foot travel, unnecessary labor, and really optimize the condition. When it comes to, for example, a 1500 VFU deployment, typically that's going to be a three-tier deployment. So now you're talking about 500 units on each tier. And then often we'll either design for efficiency what we would either call a butterfly or a T design, which means that the cultivation areas in a butterfly are on the outskirts on the left and right wing. You centralize all of your plant touching and your support spaces, which allows you better workflow, segregation of different employee groups. So you don't have your trimmers going into cultivation spaces. You don't have extractors going into trimming. And it allows the minimized travel, because if the cultivation is in the wings and everything is centralized to the middle, you're not going from one side of the building to the other. You're going from one side of the building to the center. And the same is true when it comes to these deployments in what we call a T-shaped building, where we're using a front array and a centralized array of support spaces, again, to most efficiently allow operations to proceed at the facility, but to minimize the risk from biosecurity, make sure employees are happy and traveling less, and just it's more of an efficient process.
How many customers do you have in the U.S. or North America?
Gosh, well, this is our first year really starting to focus internationally, so we can talk about domestic for now. And right now, we are building out projects, and we have operations in Washington, Oregon, Colorado, Nevada, Illinois, Massachusetts, New Jersey, Florida. I'm missing some, but that's Rhode Island. And there's still a few more, but we're very actively building out and supporting our clients across the country. Right now, we've ramped up from about a 300 VFU per year manufacturing capability to over 3,000. Oh, so wow. We are really trying to address the demand we're seeing. And I get it. You know, at first, there was a little bit of trepidation. Growing vertically is a tough thing to do. Growing under LEDs is also not as common. You combine the two and it looks different. But once our cultivators started to, I guess, poke at the technology, right? I think that they were really relieved. A lot of cultivators worried that technology is here to replace them, and it's not. We absolutely could not be AgriFi without amazing cultivation partners. But our goal is to empower the grower, to give them the ultimate toolbox so they can do what they love, which is grow phenomenal cannabis. I've met few growers that aren't interested in pushing their abilities, pushing the plant to elicit more yield, more cannabinoids, a better trichome structure. And they do this because they love the plant. And so what we want to do is provide you all of the tools to control that environment, to elicit those responses. We want to record all of the data for you because I don't want you to have to go through those steps. That's a lot of labor. And then we also provide a lot of analytical tools that help us both understand the data and parse it and pull it apart and put it back together in meaningful ways, because our client operators need more than just good flower. They need actionable business insights. They need to know, not 2 months later when their crop is done and they've got it tested and they had time to correlate a report on a clipboard. They need to know what those business decisions are now, because it's still 10 weeks before that flower can be cloned, grown, harvested. And then you have another month of testing, trimming, packaging before it's actually on a retail shelf. So with a 3 month backlog in terms of how quickly you can enact an actual change in your operating decision platform, having these insights at your fingertips allows you to be both responsive, intentional, and really maximize the success of your operation.
You mentioned how once cultivators sign on, they kind of see the light in terms of the value of the product. But what are some of the bigger reasons that you get pushback from cultivators that maybe aren't sold yet on it?
Sure. I think that the first thing is the multi-tiers. So it's hard enough where I'd say 80% of growers in this industry are still more comfortable with HID lights, high pressure sodium, metal halide, ceramics. So the LEDs are an immediate stumbling block, but most of our cultivators at least have started experimenting, and you're starting to see efficacies of LEDs, the efficiency at converting electrons to photons, upwards of 3 micromoles per watt. Our lights are, in fact, 3 micromoles per watt, and that's very high in the ability to convert those electrons to photosynthetic energy. When you compare that to an HID, for example, they're producing about 1.7 micromoles per watt. And so it's almost a 2x at this point. But still, they're not commonplace. They're not ubiquitous. And so there is that stumbling block. The other one is, again, a lot of cultivators are used to growing slightly larger plants. So I'll give you an example. It's very typical to take a clone that's well-rooted, to pot it up in, say, a 5-gallon container of rock wool or cocoa quarin perlite, and then to grow that in a vegetative phase for 5 to 6 weeks, where your plant is going to be 3.5 feet tall, maybe more, and then you flower the plant for 8 to 11 weeks, depending on the maturation timing of that variety, and your plant is going to top out at 6 to 7 feet tall. And it's going to have been alive for 3 weeks of clone, 5 weeks of veg, and let's say conservatively 8 weeks of flower. So now you're at a 16-week maturation time. It's taken up resources from your facility. It's taken square footage of your canopy, and all for this one harvest event. Well, that is a very comfortable and easy way to grow. And if you've ever had a plant grow outside, you'll realize that they don't like to be in pots. They grow quite large and they keep growing and they don't want to stay at 3 feet tall. So I think when cultivators see that it's both LED driven and that there's a multiple tier and vertical element, it can be off-putting if they haven't grown and manipulated plants in that way. But there was just another study that came out recently that talked about high density planting as the key method to maximize the productivity. And this is where you're putting in, one plant per square foot, maybe 2 plants per square foot even. And what that allows you to do is you minimize the amount of time the plant is veg, because the cloning takes the same amount of period of time to develop roots, and flowering is a maturation process or generative process, and that is also temporal. But it's about the veg period. So instead of growing for 5 weeks, I erase that. I take it down to 1. Mm-hmm. And I've now saved 4 weeks out of my entire cycle. Now that 4 weeks allows me to generate approximately 1/3 more crops a year. And so not only am I going to produce more on each crop cycle with this high density planting, it's going to produce more product per square foot of canopy per year. And so once the cultivators can get over the LEDs and kind of rationalize that they can work within a multi-tier vertical system, they become our biggest proponents, because it is labor savings. It is automating a lot of the mundane physical tasks that cultivators may not love, but that are so important at eliciting the best responses. So I think that it's a great transition. We really find wonderful support. I have great relationships with pretty much all of our cultivators. And it's because we're always there to help. We are there to support you. If you get a spider mite infestation, if your nutrient program goes off the rails and you're seeing deficiencies, my team, the Horticulture and Customer Success team, is with all of our clients all the time. Anytime they have a problem, you have a sounding board. We have probably 50 years of academic and practical cultivation for cannabis and other ornamental crops in terms of the experience on the team. And we bring that to bear to help ensure the success of all of our customers and operators.
So is your team constantly watching every grow? Just, I got to imagine that with all the data points, you guys have to have flags going off every once in a while. Just like, hey, you got to call this dude in Washington because things are getting off the charts here.
I wish it was just me. It's a whole team of individuals. And sadly, I should probably call out our chief information officer, Stephen Drucker, because Steve is, I must be an insomniac. He never sleeps, but he is always watching. I'm getting calls at 3 a.m. like, hey, I think their chiller went down. Why? Well, because the temperature spiked 15 degrees over the last hour. We also offer manned 24-hour monitoring. So if you are interested, it's kind of like an ADT alarm where your facility can be monitored by human eyes. But at the same time, we also set up a very intricate and easily adjustable alert system that triages what's happening and then can escalate it easily. So to give you an idea, David, if I have a cultivation team and it's 1 a.m. and my temperatures go out of range, I can set a temperature warning and I'm going to get Bob up first. If after 5 minutes, Bob doesn't answer and address the issue, then it'll wake up Jim. And after 5 more minutes, it'll escalate it to Ted, who's a manager. And if Ted doesn't address this, then after 1 minute, then and only then are we going to wake up the owner out of the bed to tell them that there's a problem. But all of these alerts are triaged and are adjustable. And so you can choose from phone calls, you can choose email messages, you can choose SMS text messages, and you can set up the tree or the escalation path, as well as the contact path. And I think that this is a really important feature as some of our facilities have multiple millions of dollars of product in flight at any given time. A small issue with your chiller or with one of your circuits going down can literally be hundreds of thousands of dollars in play. And so the more quickly we can help our client operators address a potential problem and alleviate that problem, the better our interests are all aligned.
Well, and I've heard about there being sort of a dearth of maintenance personnel in this industry, and they're almost outsourcing maintenance to your team.
Well, in fact, because of this ongoing relationship where there's a software component and an ongoing assistance component, any of the maintenance that our units require, it's going to be provided by us in a very timely fashion. You know, we usually are trying for a 24-hour response window, even if we have to travel across the country. But David, you're right. There is a lack of trained professionals, people that are comfortable going into badged facilities, controlled facilities, and that have the skills and abilities to really work on some of the equipment in the industry, which is why taking AgriFi's ecosystem approach, making sure that our team can control everything and fix everything from a fertigation system to your CO2 valve, down to the programming on the software, which actually delivers the fertilizer. Our team is there for support and is going to be able to provide that round the clock and around the country.
I read that AgriFi system, you know, there's an AI component to it. So what is the AI behind AgriFi?
So the first thing to clarify is AgriFi Insights is the name of the software. So we get a lot of questions about artificial intelligence because AI and AI.
Gotcha.
That said, the system does incorporate some artificial intelligence elements. And as we're developing the technology, we're incorporating more and more of those feature sets into the new versions. But to give you an idea, there's an algorithm which is learning the CO2 valve patterning for this particular piece of hardware. And so it can more quickly adjust opening and closing the valve to not exceed the set points, right? So typically, if I am targeting a 1500 part per million CO2 level, a valve is going to be triggered to open until that level is reached, but it's not immediate, right? The sensor doesn't know the millisecond that that CO2 level is reached inside the VFU. So typically we overshoot and then we wait for the environment to kind of equalize. And then if we have to, we shoot or inject more. So what this algorithm is doing is it's minimizing the overshoot by essentially learning the patterning of the valve. Now, that's not a very sexy kind of relation to artificial intelligence, but it is useful. It saves CO2, it saves resources. I think that where is more exciting is where we're headed with camera technology, machine learning. So right now we're training camera models to pick up everything from nutrient deficiencies, fungal pathogens, pest damage signs. And the beauty of this is that our units are capable of having cameras and really getting granular on the level and the quality of the image. So you can then start to actually hone in on the source or the host plant where the insects might be or where the pathogen might have originated. And further, not only are we able to use this camera technology or will to identify these certain problems, there's so much more you can do. You can start looking at surface area mapping. So as my plants are young, the leaves are small. As they grow, they get bigger and bigger. You can actually start to track how much surface area the leaves take up in relation to the negative space and start figuring out whether your production is on track for the maturation as it was scheduled, right? So I'm planning to harvest this on April 20th, and everything has to be just so. However, if my surface area mapping is showing that maybe there was a nutrient issue, maybe we weren't hitting those growth targets, then I'm going to have to push my harvest out. And it's that kind of business intelligence that allows growers to make very different decisions. So a lot of growers today, there's a demand for product. We know that you need to have a perpetual harvest. You need to be able to supply those dispensary clients with product or you'll lose your shelf space. So we'll have eight or nine rooms, and those rooms are going to harvest on a perpetual cycle, one room, 1 week. Well, that's not really what's best for the plant, right? We're putting them into a calendar and saying that I'm going to every week take one room down, whether it's ripe or not. So this is utilitarian. It's the greatest good for the greatest number. We put 10 genetics in, there's 1,000 plants. Most of them are ripe. Some are a little over, some are a little under, but most are good. And good isn't good enough. So what our technology allows is that if this variety needs 73 days to fully mature and express its maximum potential, then you give it 73 days, but you don't have to give the chamber next to it 73. If there's a variety that's a fast finisher, like an early Dutch treat, you might be able to take that particular VFU on day 49. And so again, this ability to do what is correct, what is best for both the plant genetic and ultimately your bottom line is the power that AgriFi gives to our operators.
When your operators have millions of data points, and you are bringing in billions of data points every day, how do you make sure that both you and your customer isn't buried in big data?
It's a really good question. One, the data isn't driving the ship on a day-to-day. We collect the data because we know we're going to want to parse it later. The other thing we do is we offer a lot of tools that are helping our clients and operators better understand their data quickly. So I'll give you an example. Let's say I was a new operator and I was going to take 10 of my VFUs to optimize a new cut of Cushman's, right? Everyone's familiar with Cushman's, but maybe there's a new variety. So I'm going to put it in every VFU. So that's 10 VFUs. If we have 50 plants per VFU, now we're at 500 plants loaded. What we're going to do is then run those individual chambers with slightly different environmental conditions, right? Or slightly different stress events. And we're then going to, at the end, look at the chemical profiles, look at the biomass return, and evaluate how it went, right? And it's pretty easy to evaluate this unit provided or yielded more than this. This particular recipe had the highest cannabinoid level and this the highest terpene. But what we then need to do is start looking at where those variations came from. So if it was a thoughtful and intentional experimental process, then we can very simply just look and say, well, the higher temperatures showed a linear increase in cannabinoids and biomass, but terpene fractions were negatively affected because we're probably volatilizing some of those at the slightly warmer temperatures. And so we can kind of use common sense, but that's still not fast enough. So we've developed a comparable engine where you can look at minute by minute of each one of those 10 recipes, the software will then parse through millions of data points and say, listen, on day 11, you had the biggest amount of delta between these different conditions. You know, there's a 5-degree temperature difference on that day instead of a 2-degree temperature difference. And as you start to look at where these differences were and how the end product was impacted, you can start to draw not causal, but correlative lines. And it's this that leads us down the path of future research to start trying to hone in on actually using some of these stressors, this high temperature or low temperature or high amount of red light, whatever it is, to elicit that response repeatedly. And then because each chamber is independent, I'm not having to apply it to 1,000 plants in a big room. I'm applying it to 50 at a time and taking a lot of data. So it really allows us a very efficient way of providing clients the opportunity to test and optimize their program.
What kind of expense are people looking at? You know, what is the cost of a VFU and what kind of ROI are people looking at?
You know, the cost is really relative to any of your more technological cultivation when you look at the full build-out costs. You know, I think that as an industry, there's a couple of pieces of information floating around that really do us a disservice. And if you look at the internet and you say, how much does it cost to build an indoor grow facility per square foot? You know, the numbers $100 and $125 come up fairly frequently from a couple of articles back in like 2016, 2017. The problem is that's when we were building out rooms like large basement cultivation facilities, right? Mm-hmm. We were really not building them out to the standard, the pharmaceutical level that we look to do today. So when you start looking at building a modern cultivation facility with infrastructure and biosecurity and process flow, not only are we comparable, we often are less. And the ROI can be well under 1 year on all of the equipment. So it pays for itself and will continue to pay for itself for every year in operation. And, you know, where some would cite an industry average of around 40 to 50 grams per square foot of canopy, you know, our cultivators are routinely hitting 70. And the highest they've achieved is 99 grams per square foot of canopy, which if you start extrapolating, works out to almost 3,000 grams per square foot of floor space if you triple stack with our hardware. So what we're offering cultivators is not just a modern solution for cultivation, not just a solution for consistency, but one that can deliver the highest quality product at the lowest price point and really give you a leg to stand on for both differentiation and quality as the market kind of matures.
You want to go from 300 units to manufacturing 3,000. Are you having any issues scaling or any issues running with the materials shortages we're seeing?
Well, it would be foolish for me not to at least address the global supply chain problem that we've all been having. And yes, but I'm blessed. I'm the chief science officer. And so I focus more on the horticulture and the plant side, but I am blessed to have an incredibly talented hardware team and manufacturing team here at AgriFi. And so for a lot of our parts, we have 5 and 6 different vendors. We've been able to secure the full year of most of the equipment already. So we are already planned and able to hit and achieve our production goals. But it is a tough time in the industry right now. Electronics are in short supply. Diodes can be in short supply. And, you know, even just recently, I heard that plastic is going to be one of the new supply chain problems. So as we start to kind of evolve into our new post-COVID, you know, post-pandemic world, I think that AgriFi's ability to think ahead, to be prepared, to keep up with our production demand is going to allow us uninterrupted operations and really the ability to address that consumer demand that we're seeing and that we've worked so hard to achieve.
So earlier this month, AgriFi acquired Lab Society. And then since September 2021, they've acquired Precision Extraction Solutions, Cascade Sciences, Pure Pressure. Why the heavy push into extraction?
Sure. I think that what we have to appreciate is that AgriFi wants to provide solutions for the industry as a whole, and that the more complete offerings that AgriFi can provide to our client operators, the better service they'll experience, the better success they'll see. So when we looked at extraction, we really looked at the entire non-plant touching portion of the cannabis supply chain. And so cultivation is a no-brainer. I think that our solution, the hardware and software together, really represent the future of cultivation. But after that, we realized that a lot of our client operators were asking us for information on extraction to help design the extraction lab to go into their buildings. And that as you look at the product portfolio mix, right, 50% of all the markets are flower, but dabbable textures are the fastest growing segment of the market and represent a significant uptick in the product portfolios that are hitting shelves. So what we wanted to do is be able to provide the best in class equipment for the full supply chain of cannabis. And so that's everything from the cultivation, hardware and software, going into trimming solutions, going into packaging solutions, and like we're talking about, extraction solutions. And what we realized was that CO2 is losing ground. I think initially it was looked as a safer process. I'm sure there's a lot of big large-scale CO2 operators that would disagree, but it requires additional fractioning steps, and you can't get to the full purified, what we would call full-spectrum oils, as easily as you can. And if you're trying to make these dabbable textures, the hydrocarbon technology really is probably best to give you the widest range of diamonds and sauce and waxes and shatters and live textures that are becoming more and more popular. When it came to pure pressure, it was a no-brainer. If we have hydrocarbon extraction, a very, very popular option, we have ethanol extraction, great for volume, great for vape cartridges, very fast growing category. We needed to address solventless, which would be water extraction, which is still a solvent, but I'm just a nerd. So, pure pressure was an absolute industry leader in that space, an innovator, and made a perfect alignment so we could offer the finest hydrocarbon equipment through Precision, the best solventless equipment through pure pressure. When it came to Cascade Sciences, in order for you to finish these processes, there's often several steps of distillation, crystallization, winterization, and then there's the in-house laboratory equipment made by companies like Agilent that are doing mass spec and GC that you're going to bring in so you can test your own products before you send them out to third-party labs. So this was a natural fit to, again, increasing that supply chain touch. And Lab Society, our most recent acquisition, really was focused on their solutions for distillation at a larger scale, as well as crystallization. So I think what we've been able to do is, and I don't want to minimize any of these companies, all of them sell multiple products, are leaders in their class, in their industry, but putting them all under one umbrella allows us to service our customers better and deliver best-in-class products for all of those different types and methodologies of extraction. And I'll tell you, keep us going because we have plans to continue looking to expand our touch on the cannabis supply chain without touching the plant.
Now, I know that we're running out of time here, but I understand your work as a university consultant, but how did you become a film consultant?
That one was an interesting one. A gentleman walked into my shop and I saw him very much out of place. He's wearing the wrong clothing and he's carrying an architecture case. And I go down and I chat with him and he unfurls this blueprint, which I quickly recognize is actually an artist's I don't want to say copy. They definitely based it on a hydroponic system out of Thailand that was used to grow vegetables. And so he starts talking to me about what's on the plan set. And it's this big, giant, vertical A-frame garden with multiple layers of hydroponics. And he just says, you know, can we do this? Can you do this? And I said, sure. You know, it felt like a Google job interview, right? How many golf balls fit on a school bus, right? It's not about the answer. It's about the thought process. How are you going to attack the problem? And so I start going into the logistics of how we design the system, compensate for the pressure, and go through all of the mathematics and the nerdy things that probably bored him to sleep. And he's like, you got the job. And I'm like, well, I have a job. I thank you. I didn't know this was a job interview. He's like, well, no, this is for a movie project. And, you know, I've been looking for someone that kind of knew what they were talking about. You clearly do. And you know, that was my first foray into Hollywood films. And so it turned out that that gentleman, who is now a dear friend, is in charge of the greens department for a lot of films. In fact, he has run the greens department on probably no less than 40 or 50 different films, everything from Adam Sandler to Marvel movies to, you know, period pieces. And the whole idea was just that they really wanted to build this authentically, to make it work. And so it turned out that the movie he was working for was The Hunger Games. And that if anyone is a fan of The Hunger Games, that District 13 is underground. So how would you feed an entire civilization of people that live underground? Well, you'd grow hydroponically indoors. And so we built these giant 30-foot tall gardens and, you know, took over the Georgia World Congress Center for 6 months and grew 10,000 real plants for filming. And it was a hoot. And I got to participate in subsequent sequels in the Hunger Game franchise. And then from there, just having made friends with that film group, was able to work on the Allegiant series, the Black Panther movie. And it's just been a wealth of unique and really challenging but fun experiences. So I'd advise anybody interested in getting into the movies, you know, follow your passion and find a way. I've never met anyone outside of the film industry that when they say they don't care what it costs, just do it, that actually meant it.
Yeah. Well, so you started, this all started when you had an interest to start growing cannabis. And now you grow orchids. Do you still grow cannabis on your own?
Yes. Yes, I do. Well, I grow cannabis in Colorado where I was. I just moved to New Hampshire and it's not legal for home growers in New Hampshire yet. But I have friends that and family in Massachusetts. And so I'm helping one of my cousins now. But I love cannabis. I think that if anything, we've increased the amount of diversity in the gene pool. However, we have to be careful because there's a lot of breeding or what we would call complex breeding, where you're taking very popular varieties and you're matching it with another. And the problem is we're losing some of the genetic diversity from these, if you will, land race varieties, where we're getting farther and farther away from the original traits. So we have to be careful for that. But I love cannabis. I love the breeding. I love the nuances of the flavors, the aromas, the aesthetics. And like I said, I'm a collector. So at one point I had about 14,000 different orchids. You know, if cannabis was fully legal and I could just have a never ending collection, I wouldn't throw any variety away. I think that there's unique aspects to so many and it's just a treat. So if you're interested in growing, if you love cannabis, feel free to reach out to me. And if you have any questions about AgriFi, I'm always happy to address those. But orchids, cannabis, roses, dahlias, you name it, if it grows, I'm probably interested.
Well, David, thank you so much for joining us today, man. It really was, I really appreciate your time and it was just fascinating, man. I really appreciated hearing a little bit about your story.
Oh, I'm so glad I could provide that to you, David. Thank you so much for having me. And I really appreciate the opportunity to share my story and talk a little bit about AgriFi with your listeners. And if there's any questions or if there's any follow-up, just let me know. Again, I'd love to talk plants. It's really a passion of mine and just thrilled to be here today. So thank you.
Thanks again for your time, David, and for the bonus content. I really do appreciate you sticking around. I apologize to whoever was waiting for you on the other side of that meeting. All right. For David Kessler, I'm David Manti. and I have to do the rest of the outro. So before we get out of here, please make sure to like, share, and subscribe to the podcast. You could also help us out a lot by leaving the podcast a positive review on whatever platform you use. Finally, if you want to email the podcast, you can reach me at david@cannabisequipmentnews.com. All right, now, for David Kessler, Chief Science Officer at AgriFi, I'm David Manti. This is the Cannabis Equipment News Podcast, and we'll see you next week. Thank you for listening to the Cannabis Equipment News Podcast.